like to discover the hidden profits in affordable housing and how you can make a big difference in the process as well. Leo Young will tell us how to do this, and he's the founder and managing partner of Cornell Communities, a real estate investment firm revitalizing manufactured housing communities across 8 states. With more than $75 million in real estate transactions, institutional private equity experience, and hands-on operational leadership, he expands access to affordable housing while generating disciplined, risk-managed returns. Interestingly, I am also interested in this particular topic because I do think millions of people are struggling with affordable accommodation, and millions of people are looking for better options. And also, there's so many homeless people that, you know, would love more affordable housing as well. Tell us, Leo, about how can someone find the perfect balance between providing affordable housing to hundreds of or thousands of people and at the same time profiting from it?
Welcome to Awakened Titans Podcast with Lily Patrescu. Mind-blowing conversations with influential business titans sharing how you can manifest abundance, love, joy, success through quantum awakening, quantum manifestation, quantum healing, quantum miracles, exponential business growth, and innovative products and services.
Yeah, and thank you for having me on, Lily. I appreciate the introduction, and you hit the nail on the head. It's a very nuanced kind of intersection to be in, right? Affordable housing and profiting, right? It's, you know, it sounds like they shouldn't really go hand in hand, but in reality, it actually makes a lot of sense. And that's because right now, for my specific company and the space that we're in what's called manufactured housing communities. So it's essentially a community, think of it like a subdivision where you can have manufactured homes brought in from factories on. So it's a very practical way to offer housing that's very affordable to people, because manufactured housing is the lowest cost form of housing that's not government subsidized. So it doesn't put a huge burden on the, you know, federal government's resources to provide this affordable level of living. And if you're comparing, you know, let's say comparable rents in an area, you know, it might be, call it, you know, $700 for a lot rent as opposed to $2,000, you know, for a comparable apartment. So it's a very worthwhile kind of product for people to go in and grow with their family.
Thank you. What are the biggest misconceptions about mobile home parks?
You know, the two big things that I can think of, one is that, you know, there used to be a lot of stigma behind kind of manufactured housing, mobile home parks. It's that, you know, that the people there, they're not, you know, great people. It's just like trailer trash. It's like, for lack of a better term. But the reality is that through the years, there's been a lot of efforts to clean up these communities, you know, make them better. So a lot of the mobile home parks, they're called 50, 70 plus years old. So there's a lot of investment firms, like they're putting in money to increase increase the safety, the curb appeal, improve the infrastructure in the communities itself. So that's one big thing. You know, right now we're getting a lot of just normal people, you know, come through because they sort of ran the math in their head and they're like, wow, it actually makes a lot of sense to get a loan and, you know, pay it off into this community, because it's a nice, easy way to build in equity, because, you know, a home might be like, you know, 70,000-80,000, as opposed to a single family home that's like $300,000-$400,000 or more. And it's super hard to qualify for those. And there's like bidding wars left and right. So, you know, people like this kind of feeling, and they have their own yard, they have, you know, residents, like there's their neighbors, and they like that feeling. And, you know, for us, coming back to the first question, Lily, just as far as the profiting portion of it, yes, I mean, a lot of our investments are made possible by investors, A, who believe in our vision, but B, also believe that this is a compelling investment for them. So, you know, we kind of have to balance and make sure that we're being good stewards of capital and that we're investing the correct amount into the community. Because one of the biggest threats to mobile home parks is redevelopment. Numbers-wise, I can run you through it later, but it really doesn't make a lot of sense for a municipality to allow for a mobile home park to be run, because it costs far more in tax cost than it does in tax revenue that it takes in. So they typically, you know, get redeveloped over time into like shopping malls or, you know, 200 unit apartment complexes that pay far more in taxes. But, you know, for us, we want to keep the same usage. We don't want to displace these residents and, you know, have them find housing elsewhere. We want to keep it as such. So to do that, it's kind of a difficult task to make sure that the infrastructure is going well and that they have a clean, safe, and compliant place to live.
Thank you. I'm familiar with some investors actively seeking to invest in affordable housing in Miami. Okay. And what I know of that is that it's actually very hard to find a plot where you can actually put these because of planning and zoning permissions and so on. So I'm wondering, how can someone actually find a really good plot to, let's say, create affordable housing for people? Because some people are thinking, okay, I can just put like one house in a plot, and others are thinking, okay, I could put 10, 20, because like the price is so affordable that even for like $20,000, you can have a mobile home bought. And then I don't know if it's like an extra 10 or 15 to actually install the different plumbing and so on and permissions and that you might need to apply for. But the difficult part is actually finding the place where you can actually put it.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the difficult part, Lily, is the zoning itself. A lot of these projects don't get approved simply because, as I mentioned earlier, the math doesn't really make sense for the municipalities. So then most of the transactions that make sense happen in the existing property. So, you know, to go in and buy the existing ones, and you want to make sure that you're budgeting enough for any infrastructure upgrades that you need to do, or if you're buying a piece of land to do it yourself in, that you're budgeting enough. And, you know, a lot of people, they find that they underestimate the cost of utilities. Like if you need to put in, let's say, a septic tank, right? And like to service like your one property, like sometimes it makes sense, but many times it doesn't.
Thank you. Tell us also about how temporary is affordable housing, because another aspect that investors were mentioning was that you're unlikely to actually get approval for permanent affordable housing in a certain area. You might get it for a temporary area. Like, for example, let's say you have like a building site and then you need locally some affordable housing, some mobile homes for the workers that like work locally for, let's say, 4 years while they're continuing that development. But you're unlikely to actually get this permanent permit for like, I don't know, 30 years. Because from my calculations, the thing that makes a lot of sense in terms of profiting from this is that you do get like a permanent permit, because after 4 years, your investment actually gets fully cleared and then you're just profiting after that. You can correct me in terms of numbers, but yeah, that's how, kind of how it seems. Yeah. So yeah. Are you likely to actually get like a permanent permit for doing affordable housing on certain plots?
Yeah. So yes, to answer your question, like typically the mobile home parks that we're involved with, they're what's called grandfathered in to their existing usage. So that just means that the municipality has to legally allow you to continue to run it as such until you decide not to. So maybe the conditional use permits that you mentioned may be for long-term RV stays, which I've definitely heard of. There's places down south that, you know, there's like, you know, oil and, you know, construction going on. So like a bunch of people come in their RVs, they stay for like a couple of years at a time. And then once they're gone, like they move. So that might be it. But typically mobile home parks, like once you're there, like that's it. And the grandfathered status is what gives the property so much value because of the scarcity of the number of projects in the U.S.
Thank you. So how would someone find like a good plot?
So there's a couple of ways. So you find it through brokers like finding you deals, or you can directly reach out to sellers on your own. And that's actually one piece of arbitrage that we've been seeing a lot lately, is that since there's so much institutional interest into the mobile home park space, the pricing that we see from, you know, broker deals, it's just generally higher. So, you know, we find it worthwhile to like develop our own deal system to find and like build relationships with sellers. Yes, it might take a few years to develop that relationship for them to trust you to actually transact. But, you know, when it does happen, we're able to get it at just more compelling prices that sort of offset our investment into the deal system.
Thank you. And you currently have some places where investors could actually invest in mobile home parks?
Yes. So we operate through the syndication model, which is basically the private equity model. You know, we pull together capital from investors. You know, we buy a property that's larger than what individuals have access to. We operate it. We do everything end to end. The investors are a pro rata owner, and you know, they would get cash flow, they get depreciation benefits, and obviously at the end they get a nice lump sum.
Thank you. And tell us about how does this kind of investment differ in terms of returns versus other property investment deals? Because on paper, it sounds like it is a lot more profitable than you might think.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. So first off, yes, when you sort of dig in, right, you go in from the surface level, when you're looking at an investment, you might see like nice marketing, shiny numbers, and you're like, wow, that's great. But, you know, depending on how the sponsor team underwrites the deal, how they run their numbers, their assumptions may or may not be reasonable. But even with really conservative assumptions, mobile home parks, on average, they cash flow really well, and they give a lot of depreciation benefits. You know, for us, like our rule of thumb is that we try to double our investors' money once every 5 years. So, I mean, that's been going well so far. Like some of our projects are ahead of business plan by a couple of years. So our investors are thrilled. The hard part is finding the deals that make sense, which for us, we stay patient in. You know, we just keep swinging and, you know, until something makes sense.
Thank you. And what's the best way for someone to get involved in affordable housing? Like what's the minimum requirement in terms of sums to invest?
Yeah. So, you know, typically like the range for different, you know, sponsors, like it depends, you know, some are on like the super high amounts, but you know, for us, like we try to keep it low. I think generally out there, we see like 100 to 250,000 as a minimum, but for us, like we're even lower because, you know, we want to just provide opportunities to individuals, you know, give them access that they wouldn't otherwise have. So we keep it around 50,000 for as long as we can. And, you know, for those that are interested, you know, they can go to our website, cornellcommunities.com. You can sign up for our wait list. You know, we'll make sure it's a good fit, and then, you know, we'll keep you posted. But the caveat, just to set the expectations right, is like we don't have many deals because we're very selective. So maybe like a few opportunities per year. So it's good in the meantime just to, you know, get to know each other.
Thank you. Tell us which state you're based in, and are the deals that you get, do they tend to be in that particular state, or do they tend to be like all over the U.S.?
Yeah, no. So I'm based in New York City, and we don't have any properties in New York because the laws just make it very hard to offer affordable housing. It just doesn't make sense as a business owner to provide this kind of service. So for the most part, we're in the Midwest and the Southeast. So, you know, anywhere from like Oklahoma, Kansas, Ohio, those areas to like North Carolina, Virginia. We do have a couple of assets closer to home, but you know, it's quite nuanced in terms of operations.
Thank you. What's the best location for someone to invest in affordable housing? Are there particular states that you find are better? And if so, why?
Mm-hmm. So places where we're seeing strong growth in general, I mean, when you're investing, like, you know, putting my investor hat on, I generally like to see that there's job opportunities, there's income growth, there's like net migration. So, you know, in the Southeast, we're seeing a lot of that. Places like North Carolina, the secret's somewhat out. That's why the properties are being bid up that much. But there's generally opportunity in the Southeast. In the Midwest, it's less compared to the Southeast, but the cash flows tend to be higher. So, you know, the investors that we work with, they sort of fall into two different buckets. Some like more cash flow, some like more appreciation.
Thank you. Tell me about the demographics impact on the ability of the investor to get a higher return on investing in affordable housing and the current trend for perhaps less foreigners coming into the US.
Yeah, so I think we're very fortunate in that for the mobile home park space, we're essentially order takers because the supply of the housing is so limited that we have wait lists for all of our communities. And that's simply because like it's such a compelling value for residents. And the average residency inside a mobile home park is 10 to 15 years or more, compared to 18 months for apartment buildings. So once people come in, they tend to stick around for a long time. And that's what's working for us. International migration doesn't really impact us as much. These are mostly kind of blue collar workers, the folks working in Walmart, like, their jobs are very safe. You'll always need like a cashier at Dunkin' Donuts or something.
Thank you. What would you say are the primary things that need to be included in this affordable housing in terms of like furniture or in terms of like essential elements that will make someone excited about sticking around to this property for like 10, 15 years? Are there any like things that they consider kind of like luxuries that you provide that perhaps other mobile home parks don't provide?
Yeah, so we're very lucky in the space that our business model is very simple in the sense that we just provide clean utilities and we make sure the water system, sewer system, electrical is all good, the roads are good. That's pretty much for the most part what we care about. But there is like ways to get fancier, if you will. There's like the properties that Blackstone owns, and there's like these REITs that have like great funding, and they could put in clubhouses and stuff. That we don't typically go after those. I mean, those are at a slight premium, but we go for middle of the road. It's not too cheap, not too expensive. It's kind of like at market rates, if not like slightly lower. They have what they need, and residents really like it.
Thank you. Tell us about like the housing association or the kind of community that tends to manage the properties. Is that kind of like expensive or is that something that you actually do for this particular community?
Yeah, so we're an in-house manager, so we manage the properties in-house. It's not like there's a homeowners association like you see in a condo building. So we manage the day-to-day, just make sure like residents know where to pay rent, maintenance issues, also onto the bigger issues like okay, how do we budget for this replacement? That's like multi six figures. So it really depends.
Thank you. Tell us about your personal background and what motivated you to start investing in affordable housing.
Yeah, so to put a long story short, so I've been in real estate for coming on to a decade now. I started as a passive investor myself. At the time, I was working at Tesla during a really intense period of the company's history. So I ended up getting really burnt out, and I was like, there has to be a way to generate income that doesn't depend on me to clock in, right? I didn't like that feeling of relying on one source of income, so I started investing. I found syndications, private investments, and started investing that way, created some cash flow, and got really into real estate, helped people buy and sell properties, and then was working at a fund for some time, helping them allocate capital. And one day I was sat down by a friend, just he walked me through the investment thesis, like why mobile home parks are a great investment right now. It's very recession resilient for what it is, and there's a real arbitrage for a smaller mid-size operator like us to get involved and to bring investor value. So that's why we came in. It made a lot of sense, and we get the opportunity to really help residents like live and continue that affordable way of living.
Thank you. How can investors figure out whether their area is a suitable place for creating affordable housing? And how will they know whether they can get like a permit, the right planning and permits for doing so?
So the location, it depends on more so planning and zoning. So it depends from the municipalities. And generally, from what I've been seeing, the more rural the area, the more likely the projects would get approved. But then the constraint and where investors have to be smart is if the investment has a good return. So, you know, a lot of projects I get pitched is like their build costs, because construction costs, like we know because of COVID, material costs, labor costs, like a lot of these like are much more expensive because of after COVID, and they take longer. So after running the numbers, we're like, it actually makes sense to just buy an existing one and retrofit certain things and like upgrade it. But, you know, some people do that still.
Thank you. Did you find that because of perhaps less incoming foreigners, did you find that the construction costs and the, you know, maintenance costs and so on, do they get higher or not?
The maintenance cost has steadily gone up for us, just service in general. A lot of our vendor bids, they go up, you know, some as high as like 40-50% or more. I would say insurance is the one thing to watch out for. We're lucky in our asset class. We're not like apartment buildings like that have massive increases. You know, it's just generally insurance folks after COVID, they kind of took a fresh look at natural disasters, how much it costs them and like what it makes sense to do business at. So we're seeing insurance costs go up across the board.
Thank you. How do you balance investor returns with resident impact?
We have our business model. We have sort of what we think is feasible. I think the feasibility portion is very important to know, because we're never ones to try to, you know, squeeze everyone for their last dime and stuff like that. That's stuff that I don't personally like, and like it doesn't align with our core philosophy. So we want to make sure that we're giving a compelling value for what the product is. You know, we want to be slightly below market and also like make the investments into the property that like, okay, like these guys are actually doing work. They're actually replacing things. They're installing lights. They're putting in new signs. Like, okay, I get it. And, you know, to them, their lot rent isn't really that much. I mean, it's like $300-$400, $500 maybe. So it's still like very affordable for them. And that's something that we try to keep on going to.
Thank you. What is the best location for someone to invest in affordable housing? I'm talking about in terms of, does it need to be like close to like a Walmart or to a construction site or to a, I know, a school? Or are there any particular locations that you find are more suitable for installing these kinds of affordable?
Yes. So you always want to look at what drives demand in the area. I mean, as with all real estate, right? You have to understand like what the supply and demand of the asset class is. So for us, very much so, you know, Walmarts are a great indicator that there's going to be enough demand for that kind of housing product, that it's not like, you know, too nice of a place or the other way around. So you want to look for national retailers. Those are a great sign. Major employers in the area, especially if they're kind of like, call it blue collar kind of employers. So we have like paper mills. Paper mills are great. Or, you know, factories that like Lego factory. That's another great one, right? So you want to find sort of demand drivers in the area that are feasible for the residents to commute to.
Thank you. Do you have any stories of people that were impacted by this affordable housing, where perhaps they were forced to kind of move out of a bigger home, and then they are now happier because perhaps they downsized, but they are happier because they now can afford to go out, or I don't know, something that they afford to do now.
Absolutely. So we have plenty of folks who downsize, you know, like older people, like they retired and, you know, they had a 4-bedroom home that, you know, they no longer need. So they sell it off, and then they come to us and they ask for a home. They either buy it themselves or they get a loan for it. It's very affordable, and you know, they just stay, they do their thing, and they're quiet. And you know, generally those residents make for a great neighbor. We care about the community too, because they, you know, they'll plant flowers and like make the place nicer, instead of I don't know, like maybe a contractor is just like there to sleep. So it's always nice to have like folks around.
Thank you. I lost my train of thought. What I was going to ask, where is the affordable housing heading in the next decade? Where do you see this going?
So affordable housing, I'll give you two answers, one as far as mobile home parks, one as far as affordable housing. So the mobile home park space, there's going to be challenges in the next 10 years, and not so much for investors, but more so just for mobile home parks in general, because the two biggest threats to mobile home parks are the aging infrastructure and also legal repercussions and legal implications, because there's a lot of laws and, you know, a lot of well-meaning politicians, like they pass laws that kind of restrict the free flow of the economy, and that just makes this kind of housing harder to operate. And then also, like, the infrastructure, do the investors who purchase these communities, like, do they have enough set aside to continue running it, to replace certain utilities, right? And do it in a compliant way, because when it comes to, for example, water, like, you know, the Department of Health or like the Environmental Protection folks, they'll get involved too. So it must be done in a way that is compliant, makes sense. So that's one thing. I mean, the supply of mobile home parks will continue to shrink, and that's why you'll see a lot of the, you know, larger investment institutions, like, they come in with big dollars trying to buy up everything that they can, because they're like, wow, this is like a really recession resilient asset class, like some of the lowest default rates within commercial real estate. Like, it makes a lot of sense. Like, folks are here for 10, 15 years, and, you know, it, like, we're getting waiting lists for most of our communities. So that's one side. Affordable housing as a whole, it's more subjective, because, you know, the government, like, they fund a lot of affordable housing, like Section 8, there's like a lot of payments there. So that depends on kind of how the U.S. Performs in general. But I think there's going to be more of a need for quote unquote affordable housing, which is going to put more of a burden on the government to kind of provide these things, which, you know, could have like further implications, just like maybe folks don't qualify because, like, there's just too many people interested. So that's something to watch out for.
Thank you. How sturdy are these mobile homes?
So generally they're wind rated. So it depends on where it is. So, like, if you have a home in the Midwest versus the Southeast, they have different sort of element ratings, like how much rain, how much wind can you resist? And they generally put it pretty resistant. But the positive thing is, I mean, they're less sturdy than stick built homes. That's just a fact. But, you know, for a lot of the times, like, let's say North Carolina, for example, when you have like big hurricanes, you know, FEMA will come in and they'll cut you a check, basically. And a lot of folks, like, when they have their homes, like, yeah, I mean, they'll evacuate. But when they have their homes destroyed, like, they just get a check to buy a new home. And it's like, they end up with a better home.
Thank you. For those investors wanting to get involved in investing in affordable housing, tell us about the timelines. So let's say right now you have some projects where people can invest that are kind of ready to invest in, I assume. And then let's say if you were to get a new project, how long it would take to kind of get it off the ground in terms of what would you do there? Would you like upgrade some of the facilities, or what exactly would you do? Would you add some value there? And then that would take like how long to do that?
Yeah. So generally we like a medium term business plan. So we like to have some breathing room in terms of our actual implementation of the changes of our value add. So, you know, typically we hold our assets, like, call it between 5 and 7 years, you know, up to that kind of doubling our investors' investment mark. And in the meantime, like, as far as how long it takes to get going, the good news is that for us, we buy existing and cash flowing assets. We don't speculate. We don't have development. So it's not like investors are without cash flow for a long time. We typically pay them within, call it the first year, even for the first quarter. So, you know, after we close the next quarter, like, you start receiving your quarterly dividends. So investors love that.
What else would you like property investors to know about investing in affordable housing?
Mm, The one thing that people forget sometimes is that you're, as an investor, you're an allocator of capital, right? Yes, like you want to make money, of course, but also like, what are you allocating capital towards? And, you know, this is a really nice intersection of, yes, something that's a compelling investment, but also you're doing a great service to the economy. You're providing affordable housing, you're continuing offering this, you're not displacing people. You're making sure that they can live on their lives, and you know it's a win-win for.
Thank you. Tell us about how your experience with Tesla and private equity. How did that shape the decisions that you currently make in affordable housing investments?
So, my experience at Tesla really gave me two things. So it gave me a strong sense of mission. I want whatever I do to go towards a greater good somehow. I joined that company for its mission to accelerate the world's transition to sustainable energy. And I want to basically allocate my time, efforts into something that improves the world. So that led me to here, providing affordable housing. And the other thing is work ethic, because Tesla, like, you better bring your A game, otherwise you're out. and like, Elon will not hesitate, like, you're out, like, very quick. So work ethic and a sense of mission. And as far as private equity, just understanding how the institutional investors look at things, because, you know, we were a $4.5 billion fund. So how kind of the big players view things, how they have a steadier kind of view on things, rather than, like, you know, for us individual investors, we're like trading stocks on Robinhood or stuff, like, you know, much shorter time frame compared to the larger institutions. So kind of having that private equity mindset and understanding how to get their level of returns, because on average, right, the private market has much better returns than the public market.
Thank you. For really large investors that would like to invest huge sums in affordable housing, what's the top that you can currently...
That's a question we get asked a lot. So we're typically limited by the project size. So, you know, a lot of our assets, they're call it between 2 and 10 million. So, you know, the equity or like the cash amount that we can have is capped to a certain amount. I would say it's deal by deal. But, you know, probably right now, 2 to 3 million is probably the top end. We've gotten things like that, but just they're more nuanced, and definitely reach out. We'll have a conversation. We'll sort of structure it in a way that makes sense for everyone.
Thank you. Tell us about the current impact you've already created for people and by investing in affordable housing.
Yeah, I think I'm very fortunate in that my team, we operate the assets, so we get to see it day by day, literally the impacts of it. And, you know, as the founder, I've worn every single hat in the business at one point in time. So just knowing that what you do makes a difference to people, and the impact of having a clean community, of having good vendors that do good work in the property. I mean, something as simple as like having a good snow plower. Residents really appreciate that, you know? And I think that gets overstated a lot. So, you know, very fortunate to be able to speak with residents, kind of hear what they want in their community and, you know, be able to make it for them.
Thank you. Are there any other like critical elements or critical tools or services that you provide for the community as part of your affordable housing projects where that the tenants there really appreciate having, like you said, like the snow plower and other similar things?
So service-wise, we try to, so that there's two buckets. There's essential services, landscaping, snow plowing, all that stuff that's covered. And sometimes we have what's called a fun budget. So more just community development, you know, if we're buying certain decorations for certain, you know, holidays or things like that, or maybe even just purchasing like picnic tables, you know, giving them a place to congregate and enjoy the outdoors. That's one thing. And then obviously there's the big capital projects that just take a longer time and that are like much more involved. So those are kind of the three ways.
Thank you. Do the affordable housing places, do they tend to offer like a patio, garden, and this kind of thing? And the reason I ask you this is because I was recently in Miami and I noticed so many people had like these mobile homes in their garden where they were probably like renting out or whatever. And I noticed like everyone has so much space. And, you know, I normally live in London and there's not a lot of space. There's not a lot of like garden space. There's not a lot of patio space. And then I saw like people had like these huge patios where you can like play football in the backyard. And I do think that can make like a massive difference to your mental health, having that. And I do think that for some people, it could be worthwhile to, you know, downsize from a bigger home just so they can have that opportunity to, yes, have lower rent, but also have a really big space for their children or for themselves to like just relax in the sun.
Yeah. I think having space is such a underrated amenity almost. I mean, to even call it an amenity, right? I think for us now, especially in the US where people are like having people return to the office and like we're closer to the city, like they have to live in a little apartments. They don't really have their own space. So a lot of folks, like they really enjoy having their own yard, you know, their own driveway. They could plant little flowers and stuff that they enjoy. I think that's one plus. And like, do it in a way that's like super affordable, you know, compared to like buying your home and like all that stuff. So residents do enjoy that. We just don't have like huge patios like what you said in Miami. But yeah, maybe it's a different market.
Thank you. Tell us where entrepreneurs can connect with you so they can discover more about how they too can invest in affordable housing.
Yeah, so there's really two ways to connect with me and my company. So one, you know, feel free to reach out to me directly on LinkedIn or Instagram. My name is Leo Young. So you can find me on LinkedIn there or on Instagram. It's at Leo Young Real Estate. Or you can go to our company's website, cornellcommunities.com. And you can learn more about the asset class. We have a lot of resources, actually, that we share to our investors because, you know, we understand our investors have to be patient for the next opportunity. So we want to educate them as much as we can in the meantime. So we have a lot of resources we're happy to share and chat through.
Thank you.
Follow us for more interviews with world's most influential business titans, providing you with the insights to awaken to your full potential so you can get paid to be yourself, find true happiness, and manifest anything you desire.